Hey, everybody. Welcome back to Matt and Dwight Just Might, a podcast about two Midwest-based comedians who are just trying to figure it out as they make their way through life and comedy and everything in between. And I wonder if anybody misses the old train wreck intros that when I used to try to be clever and funny and think up stuff, and it was always bad. I'm sure it was charming to a certain extent, but now I'm just like I'm an intro robot, just doing the same intro every time, same inflections in my voice.
Yeah.
Roll it back. Check the last three or four episodes.
Technically,
phoning it in as a professional.
Technically, this counts as an off the rails intro.
I'm just saying, I'm going to comment on it. You know, it's been too many episodes in a row where we just went right into doing the episode. And anyway, I'm Matt Alana Martin. With me, as always, is my co-host, Dwight Simmons. Dwight, how are you today?
I am good. We talk about being in the Midwest, and someone asked me over the weekend why I don't live on the coast, and I got to cut my grass today. So
yeah,
I got to get out there and get a little sweaty in the yard, which is not an option I had when I lived in a basement, half a basement in New York, with five roommates. So
yeah. And if you lived in half a basement in New York, you could have drowned last weekend.
I know.
With all the flooding going on. So another reason.
Yeah. See, when it floods here, it's fine.
Yeah. There's grass. There's places for it to go. Usually, you know, it's very rare. Yeah.
My air mattress isn't laying on where it's flooding.
Air mattress would have been like a raft. You know, everybody thought you were a fool for not getting a regular mattress, but then you had that air mattress and you were staying dry, just floating around like baby Moses, you know, just going down the Nile, you know,
just the air mattress just slowly losing air.
Well, that's when you need to panic. Yeah. And that's when you need to paddle over to the stairs and try to get up to the main floor, you know.
That's hilarious. Yeah, I'm good, man. I am not in a flooded basement. I am good. I just got over a little cold, I guess. I had the sniffles. Luckily, I was able to get through all my shows this weekend, but Sunday and Monday were recovery days. Luckily, if I would have had to cancel one of my shows, I would have felt awful this weekend, creatively and financially. So it was good to get through the weekend, but
yeah, let's list the shows and tell me which one you would have canceled first. Like, which one would have been the smallest hit to your creative artistic soul and to your bank account?
So the bank account, yeah,
the thing.
Yeah, those are not equally weighted at all. But I did the Let's Fest kickoff show on Thursday. It was fun, man. It's the White Rabbit. I know we've talked about this, but doing an early show on a weekday. So they were doing two shows that night. So I was hosting the 7 o'clock show, and it was just like the sun's still out and everyone's getting their first drink and people leaving work and walking in late. And it was a little rough.
Okay.
I did 10 minutes and it wasn't great. The audience wasn't great. I wasn't great. It wasn't a great exchange in either direction.
You and the audience agreed.
You agreed. Yeah, we're like, why
not be great? Yeah.
Whose idea was it?
Yeah.
To do this. And it was one of those sets, like I was doing 10 minutes, but I didn't really prepare a set list.
And so at 25 minutes, they were like, hey, Dwight, we need to get off stage.
There's an actual headliner here. So going to start the festival.
What have you filibustered the entire festival? What have you refused to yield that the very first spot of the entire festival was your hosting spot, and you just refused to get off the stage? You just kept it going until Let's Fest gave healthcare to everybody. What if you did that?
Just as an emissary of limestone. This is to prove a point. You guys made a terrible mistake bringing in an enemy of the cloth here. I didn't go over my time. I didn't want to because it wasn't going great. So I did my time and I got a laugh and got the energy up. And then, they were just kind of tight for everybody. There were some hops, but, I stayed for the second show, which was Sam Talent. And it was just like night and day. It was
It literally was night and day. You were on the day one and then the night one.
Night
was good.
And day. Everyone settled in. Cam hosted, got him going, and then it was just really a murderer's row before Sam got to see my main man, Mitchell Potts.
Nice, yeah.
Our little, we call him the little gossip. I call him little gossip.
Little gossip.
Yeah, okay. That's.
Did he have some hot goss for you?
No, he was very focused before set. Wasn't drinking. Said he's going to turn up after the set, which is a good sign. Mm-hmm. That's how you know people care about the sets they're doing at a festival when they're not like, hey, man, pass that blunt.
Yeah.
They're like, I'm going to stay just sober until
Yeah.
my set's done and then pass the blunt.
And understanding that there's still plenty of time left in the night, particularly at a festival, you know, and on the first day of a festival.
Day one.
You could just wait till after your set before you get started on destroying most of the brain cells that you have. You know, you could wait.
You could wait. You'll be all right.
Yeah. So Mitchell was doing that. He was being mature and responsible. I heard that he had a good set. That's what I heard through the grapevine.
Yes, it's accurate. The grapevine is accurate this time. Okay. The whole show, top to bottom, was great. And Sam is just so funny. I think, you know, kind of talk about this in positive and negative lights, but Sam definitely has an audience that is there for comedy. And you know, and they kind of know what's going on, know what to expect. It wasn't like his audience was just waiting for him to come out. They were giving everybody like what they deserved, and it was really fun to see. As I sat in the back and stewed over my set, I wasn't even mad about it. I was just like, all right, this shit happens sometimes. But yeah, it was fun to watch. I didn't get to hang out the weekend because I had other shows. And I wanted to go see Kanaan on Sunday. But like I said, I was just sick and I didn't want to pass the plague along.
Yeah.
Hopefully.
Another responsible decision made by comedians. What is happening?
I don't know. I don't know, man.
Yeah.
I think our podcast is like permeating.
Ether. Be more professional. Like these two old men, these two old married men.
We could take a victory lap with. Yeah,
sure. Yeah. We're helping the culture. We're, you know, we're good. You know,
anything that's positive good that happens in comedy?
It's because of
Matt
us.
And Dwight, baby.
Yep.
Anything negative? Go back and listen to the first 30 episodes.
Yeah, yeah. So, did you get to see any of the rest of the festival at all or no?
I did not. On Friday, I had the Kurt Vonnegut Gala, which I had been excited about. We got dressed up. I took my wife and my mother-in-law.
Nice.
They're both big Vonnegut people and fans, so it was nice to be able to take them to the Madam Walker Theater, which is still a beautiful building. Have you ever been to that theater?
I've not been to the Madam Walker Theater. I've watched the Mike Epps special that was taped there.
Yes.
I have a sense of it, but I've never been in it. Yeah.
It's got that, I mean, that beautiful stage and it's very historic and it kind of feels that way. Yeah. That's not where our show was. We were on the fourth floor in a conference room. So
no.
Yeah. Yes. Ooh,
and you, when you saw your space, did you like, I shouldn't have dressed up? Like, how did I get so dressed up for this?
They made it look nice, but it wasn't wasn't the thing. It was like, you know, because it's a dinner, so you have like the round tables. It felt like I was going to do comedy at a wedding.
Right. Yeah.
Because
or something.
Yeah. Like, so the stage had a podium. So I did my 30-minute set behind a podium with one of those like gooseneck mics.
Every time you moved it, it was like, rah!
Yeah. So even like they had like a Vonnegut piece like made of styrofoam, but it was really cool, but it was leaning up against the podium and like kind of angled off the stage, so anytime I touched the podium it would make that styrofoam noise, and the whole room would just but somehow it was really fun. I had a blast. It was like I had been working on the set like to be honed in and to be intentional, and I think I pulled that off in a way that was appreciated. Mm-hmm. These are very it's funny, I'm going to talk about this in a second, but doing the Vonnegut's like very well-read audience. Mm-hmm. So like any book reference
compared to like, the next night's show, yes, that you did,
yes, compared to the next night's show that I did. So but it was like, I don't
were
know,
you cramming in extra book references into your set?
No, or, I so yeah. when I was putting the set together, I was like, I have a surprising lot of book references. I wrote a specific like 5-minute opener,
mm-hmm,
about banned books that, mm-hmm, did well that I might just keep.
Yeah.
Some of it, not all of it. Some of it's very specific, but yeah. And then like I have a Great Gatsby joke that I've had forever. Mm-hmm. I talk, mm-hmm, about like the Lord of the Flies in a joke. Like, mm-hmm, I just had all this book material, I guess, that, yeah, just went really well. And then I did the Fraggle Rock, and they fucking carried me off stage damn near. But that was very gratifying because like, yeah, people were like, oh,
into it.
Yeah, we're into it, and thank you. And it was nice to kind of rub elbows with some of the more creative people in Indianapolis. Mm-hmm. Do you know, like, all right, Indianapolis, like the Kurt Vonnegut Library, there's a giant mural,
mm-hmm,
of Vonnegut.
But it's not on the library, right? It's
no.
It's, yeah, on Mass Ave, and then the library is over.
The library is on Indiana.
Yeah, yeah.
So there's a giant mural, mm-hmm, on the library.
Oh, yeah. Are they going to paint a mural of you next to him now? Is that what you're saying?
I met the artist. An artist like me. So
all right, there you go.
Look out for your boy.
Yeah.
I'm going to ask them to do it from when I had my afro, though.
Uh-huh.
Young baby Dwight.
Okay. So it will be kind of like, because a lot of times murals get put up when someone passes away, and so this is specifically a mural for your hairline, is what you're saying? Like
100%.
Yeah. Okay.
It deserves one. It was, yeah, glorious.
Yeah.
It died too soon, Matt. What could have been? It was amazing. I had a great night. That was the night. Like, I got home, and then like, I like woke up at like 3, and I was like, kind of starting to feel a little something, mm-hmm, but it wasn't bad yet.
Mm-hmm.
And I was just like, I was like, oh, that I took advantage of that open bar a little hard. So
did you just nuke it? Like, if I have that, like if I had just, I can tell like something's coming, like I am the beginning stages of a cold. Mm-hmm. I go hard. I'm like, I'm NyQuil. Taking like, yeah, I'm doing a, yeah, Theraflu. I'm doing like a boiling hot Theraflu. And I'm using that to swallow down the Tylenol night cold med, yeah, pills. Like I double triple it up. I'm like, nope, we're just going to obliterate this thing. And it usually works to, you know, yeah, knock on table. If you catch it early enough and you go hard with, yeah, a couple of different brands of cold medicine, you, yeah, know, it tends to work in my experience anyway.
Yeah. You heard it here first, gang.
Yeah.
Just don't OD. Overdose, yeah, yeah, if you overdose,
don't do a bunch of them that slow your heart rate away. And your and slow your breathing, you know, you got to balance it, you know, so yeah,
yeah, yeah. OD responsibly,
yeah, exactly, yeah.
Yeah, I did. I mean, I just took like a couple ibuprofen and then, mm-hmm, drank a glass of water, went back to bed, felt okay the next day.
Okay.
And the next night I was at Story Inn in Nashville, Indiana.
Yeah, certainly they like books. I mean, it's a Story Inn. They like stories. You know, it's a whole building dedicated to, you know, intellectualism and words, right? Is that,
yes,
accurate? Okay.
Yes, that is accurate, as we all know, if you Wikipedia Nashville, Indiana.
Uh-huh.
A town of, I don't know, 130 people.
And each one of them owns a little gift shop. 130 people owning 130 gift shops, all selling the same 6 items.
It was a bit of a different set. And uh-huh. I don't have the full gear to like completely do a different set.
Just,
but,
you know, you just replace all the book references with like Judge Judy. And
you know, she ain't lying. Y'all ever watch Maori?
Yeah. Yes, I did that go over?
Yeah, like, it did. Yeah, yeah. I got him to chant, "You are the father." It was good.
But all like, right, so what was it like? So what was the Story Inn show like?
So about 45 minutes before I go on stage, like I start sneezing.
No.
I was like, fuck. And Willie Griswold was there. I was like, he gave me a Zyrtec. It's like, maybe allergies, because I'm in the middle of nowhere,
right,
with no cell service. But I was I was trying to focus on my set, but it was just like, you get that head fog when you have when you're not feeling 100%. And so I didn't really get to hone in on a set. So the first like 5 minutes was just rambling, which they surprisingly loved. And so I just kind of hung in there. And then the performer, what do they call it? The performer energy, the performer.
Yeah, that muscle. Like, yeah, muscle memory kicked in.
Yeah. And then for 45 minutes, I did not feel sick at all. No sniffles, no sneezing. I was fine. And then I get off stage and then the floodgates open.
Yeah.
Like, start sneezing, run to the bathroom. I'm like blowing my nose.
It's a very it's a very real thing. I've had it happen to me a couple times where I've been like, not like having a cold, but even when I've had a cold too, but like I've had like been sick to my stomach or something.
Yeah.
And I really don't feel well. And you go on stage and you're perfectly fine for the duration of your set. I will tell you, like, an example of this that I saw very early on in life before I was even a comedian. I don't think I've told this story on the podcast. When I was in high school, my after school job is I worked at a place called Derby Dinner Playhouse, which is a it's like a theater in the round place that basically caters to old people, like bus tour people. Right. And they put on like Jesus Christ Superstar and Agatha Christie plays and things like that. Right. And I worked in the kitchen. I was a food runner. I ran food from the kitchen out to the buffet. And they brought in Henny Youngman. I got to see Henny Youngman live when I was like 16 years old, you know.
Damn.
And he was a million years old. And like, you know, the didn't really have like a green room. They were kind of back by the kitchen. And so he has these two assistants that are helping. We're seeing him like get out of the car. We're like, this is going to be a train wreck. Like, this old man can barely walk. He's almost like nonverbal. And then literally, and he has to get helped all the way up to like the curtains to come out on stage. And they say his name and he walks out on stage like he was like 35 years younger.
Damn.
And he does an act. And he does like, I mean, it's like an hour and a half.
Yeah.
Long thing. Damn. Just him doing all the Take My Wife, Please, all those jokes, right? He's got his fiddle with him. He plays his fiddle a little bit, you know.
That's
and
bananas.
Like, you could not tell him the minute that he walked back through the curtains and was off stage, was right back to being this very decrepit old man. It was the craziest thing I've ever seen, but it stuck with me.
What is that? That's like, it's just like, you don't, it's like, I wish they could put that in pill form.
Yeah.
Because then we would all just live off of that. Like,
well, is it, they do. It's not, they do, like, right? That's why we need to talk about this episode's sponsor, Nugenix. Do you want to have a heart attack because you're taking what's essentially a sodium pill to get your dick hard again? Nugenix.
Bo Jackson took it.
Yeah.
I like, they always have the like celebrity.
It's like
Dan Marino.
Yeah. And she'll like it too. And what they're not talking about, the she'll like it too part, is that she's going to like inheriting all your money when you die from a heart attack after taking this pill. Like, she'll like it too. Getting that payday. Your dumb ass being out of the way.
I'm hard, but my left side's numb.
You're like, but we call the ambulance later, baby. Come on, I'm hard. Let's get it done. That performer muscle thing is very, very real. And I'm glad that it saved you and that you then had a couple of recovery days. That's good.
Yeah. So, I mean, that was good.
What was like the turnout like? Because it's kind of at the end of the season, you know.
End of the season. I mean, all the seats that they set up were full.
Mm-hmm.
It wasn't like, because you could fit so many people in that field that they do it in, but it wouldn't feel that great.
Yeah,
I think they can fit like, it felt like probably 60 people.
Okay,
which felt good.
That's so great. Yeah.
I ended up doing more time than they asked for because I was having fun. I had to make up for Thursday by sticking to my time. I went over my time. As the host is walking on stage, I'm like, all right, man, just one more.
Yeah.
Y'all want one more from the king? And I gave him one more and then got in my car and drove home so that I could rest.
Mm-hmm.
I rested, but 2 out of 3 shows ain't bad. If I had to cut one, it would have been the one for the festival.
Yeah.
Just because it was 10 minutes and it wasn't that fun. I don't know if I like am I if I'm like mailing in these 10 minute sets on purpose or just being like they don't matter that much.
Well, I think that there's also the thing too where when I've hosted like just on a 10 minute hosting set here and there, like filling in at the attic or whatever, they've not been great. Like yeah. It hasn't been, it's like the hosting is the hardest gig, you know? And it's like when you're out of that and you forget that, oh yeah, the first 5 minutes, nobody's really going to be laughing.
Right.
You know, cause you're getting them used to the idea of just thinking about jokes and forgetting about, you know, their work day and finding parking and all that kind of shit. You're just getting transitioning them into the show.
Yeah.
Yeah. When you don't do it very often, you're like, this sucks. Like, it's like, why aren't y'all warmed up? Come on. I'm warmed
do
up.
Do this. Yeah. Yeah, I'm warmed up. I was ready to go. Yeah. Yeah, it's funny knowing that going in and still being mad that that's the reality.
Well, it's also the thing, too, of like our expectations, because when you know, we've talked about this before on the podcast, too. But like, you know, when you've been doing it as long as we have and at the level that we have, where we're used to headlining or featuring and we're used to doing pretty well most of the time, you know, and what feels like should be a slam dunk club in your city, you know, like the opening night of this festival, was it packed? I looked like all the shows were packed from what I could see online.
It filled in.
It filled up.
It wasn't like packed, like talent show, but
you know, like I think that's when it's always frustrating, as opposed to when you go into a show that you know, it's one of those bar shows in Michigan, you know, that's a one nighter and there's 12 people there and you have no expectations, you know. So I think it could also be that, like, you were just expecting it to go better than it did, but you know, I'm sure you did fine, dog. I'm sure it's good. Before we move on, I do want to say big shout out to Alex and Jared and why can I not think of his name, Ryan. Ryan for Let's Fest. From everything that I saw online, it looks like it was a big success. So kudos to those guys for getting it done. Very cool. Yeah. You and I both know how hard it is to do a festival. So yeah, good job to those fellas.
And it bummed me out because there are so many homies in my city from all over the country that I did not get to see. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, shout out to them. It's tough because this was the second one to happen this year in Indianapolis.
Yeah, and might as well be called like the second new comedy festival because they had brought Let's Fest down from Fort Wayne. It completely retooled it. So it's basically like starting over in a brand new market, essentially. So yeah, like, and you know, to shout out to Middle Ground too. Like, they both had good first years, you know?
Yep.
So they
also, like, this is important. I feel like both of those houses, if you will, have done so much for independent comedy over the last decade. So it's good to see them like get some shine from across the country. Like, those are high quality lineups. I'm not sure if you saw, but like, these are people that have done Limestone.
No, the features field looked really good. And then the headliners all looked solid and good and great, you know, like obviously Kinane, same talent. Then Megan Gailey, right? They had Open Mike Eagle. So they had a lot of really cool, good headliners. So
yeah, it was good.
Yeah. Big ups to those guys. I will tell you real quick about my weekend. It got real weird. So originally I was going to be a last minute fill in to host for Sabrina Wu at the Comedy Attic. But those shows wound up getting canceled because of the flooding in New York. Flights were all canceled and everything like that. And so Sabrina Wu was not going to be able to get in until, you know, basically for the Saturday shows. It was also Lotus Festival weekend in Bloomington.
Yeah.
And there's a giant outdoor stage, not directly in front of the Comedy Attic, but like a half block down.
Mm-hmm.
And so traditionally the club has been closed that weekend. And they were open. They were going to be open because they had to be closed the week before for a wedding. And so basically when Jared was trying to figure out what should we do, should we just have it be a Matt and Friends show, what should we do, you know? And it was just like, yo dog, just cancel. Like, just cancel this weekend. It's because, again, with the Lotus stage, it just would be a nightmare to try to battle it anyway. With everything else. And basically about 30 minutes after having that conversation with Jared and him, you know, deciding to go ahead and cancel it and reschedule her for the January or February, whenever she's coming back, I got an offer to be a last minute fill in to feature at Summit City.
Oh, shit.
So I basically had about 30 minutes to get my shit together and get in the car and wow. start driving to Fort Wayne. And so I was the feature for Giannis Pappas was there.
I heard that name.
Same thing. I'd heard his name a million times, but I had no real knowledge of him. Very, very nice guy. Like one of the sweetest, most genuine people I've ever talked to in the green room. Like, yeah. Like he's a couple years younger than me. And like, we have a lot of like similar things. Like he's just, he lost his parents over the last couple of years. And so just a sweetheart of a dude. His comedy is a little bit more on the, you know, he's born and raised New York dude. And so he has like kind of like that, a little bit of a edgier, rough side New York comedy style, you know, okay. Like I think, yeah. I think he's in the wheelhouse of like the Kill Tony world and like the gotcha. Skank Fest kind of guys. I think he's maybe peripherally part of that scene, you know, but great comic, knows what he's doing. Watching him was like, okay, I definitely could do more work to build bits out. He's very good at taking a concept and really taking it as far out as he can and not leaving any meat on the bone. He really right. was just like going through like, and I was like, yeah, a lot of my jokes are real short. But love a Bark Entertainment Club. Everybody there was great. The new GM Mars was dope. I hadn't worked with her yet. She was awesome. But I'm literally in the green room and they're like, Giannis is on his way. The Uber, you know, was like, is late getting him. And they're like, we're going to go ahead and start the clips. And I was like, okay, cool. Where's the host? And they're like, oh, it's a 2-man show.
Oh my, yeah.
So literally I'm learning.
I forgot about that. Summit yeah. City always does that.
Yeah. And I was like, well, the last time I was there, it wasn't like that. Last time it was a traditional 3-man show.
Yeah.
And so I'm like, oh, okay. So I had to go up and like, literally I had the 3 video clips, like the rules and the three, like, here's who's coming clips to like, okay, let me stop eating these nachos that I was shoveling into my face. Cause I thought I was going to have like a 10 or 15 minute opener set to finish eating, but it was great, man. Like the crowds were really, really good. Saturday, so particularly the
did you
crowds
have
were
to
great.
Do a half hour.
I did a half hour cold. Like okay. I went up and did a half hour cold.
Yeah.
The late show Friday was pretty light and Giannis was like, let's just do a short one. Mm-hmm. And so I did 25.
Yeah.
But Saturday crowds were great. Friday was good. They were good shows, but the Saturday shows were particularly good. Like
yeah.
It was like fun time, super loose. It was awesome. It was good. And then Sunday I was at the Louisville Comedy Club for a roast battle.
That's right.
Yeah. And it actually turned out to be pretty fun. It was like the sort of thing where they did for a couple of reasons. One, I think all the comics on it were, we all kind of had the same mindset. We're like, this isn't really our thing. Like no one went super hard on anybody. You know, there was like a group chat where we could list things about ourselves that were roastable or, and also if anything was off limits, you know?
Right.
And so, and then we all did the thing. We did opposition research where we watched each other's like reels and wrote jokes okay. about things that they talked about in their sets or whatever. And so it did like a 10-minute stand-up set, a 10-minute stand-up set. And then those two people would go head-to-head, joke, like roast joking back and forth. And then there was, and I was in the second half. So the first half was Roxana Cree versus Laura Cord. And then it was the second half was me versus Seneca Stone. And then the winners got to go into the third round. And I tell you, it was like kind of the ideal night for me because my 10 minute stand-up set, I did very, very well.
Yeah.
I was super loose and had fun. And then I did well in my roast battle, but not so well that I had to advance, which is I didn't really want to do it twice.
Right.
Like I was just like, yes, I would have won more money if I won the whole thing. But I was getting paid already like X amount of dollars just to come do it, which was good.
Right.
And I was like, so then I didn't have to do a second round of roasting.
Nice.
So it was like, oh, I nailed it. I've really found that I like threaded the needle exactly where I wanted it to be, like crushed That's... during the stand-up set and then get some laughs and do well on some, you know, I did pretty well. But to, you know, to his credit, Seneca Stone actually won the entire thing.
Okay.
And he was very good at it. He clearly had that muscle.
Right.
I do want to give a shout out to two things. One, Roxana Cree, I think is one of the main reasons why it was so fun because she's originally from Louisville and she brought a ton of people.
Okay.
I mean, and most of the crowd was there for her. And someone even asked, Kevin, the host, even asked who was here for Roxanne at some point. And it was almost everyone in the crowd. It was like 80% of the crowd.
Damn.
And it's, if she had not been on it, that means we would have been doing a roast battle for like 12 people.
That's terrible.
Got free tickets or got barked in or something like that from the site. It would have been brutal. Would have been horrible.
Yeah.
So she brought a great crowd. They were laughing for everybody. They weren't just laughing for her. And then also shout out to Anna Valenzuela, who is a good friend of mine and great comic. And she has done roast battle on Comedy Central and has done a lot of roast battle stuff in LA.
Yeah.
So she kind of gave me pointers. Like, I sent her my jokes and she was like, you need to build this out more. You need to give it more twist. She basically gave me like a little masterclass in roasting and she would send back like examples.
Yeah.
And so I don't think I wound up using any of the jokes that she was like, who are you roasting? And she was like, so she looked them up real quick and she gave example jokes.
Right.
I don't think I used any of her jokes, but she definitely made me think about, oh, I need to dig deeper. So instead of having just like a one beat joke,
yep,
I could have two or three beats on this one roast joke that made it weirder, or, you know, it just gave it more meat. You know? And so it definitely was an eye-opening thing. And so I had fun, you know, which was definitely not expecting to have fun. I was just like, I'm just going to go in there and get this money and get this over with.
Yeah. Now, was this roast battle part of the 10-day challenge we did when you were just booking shows?
It might have been.
Yeah. You're like, I'm going to do this one.
Yeah, I got it. Yeah, I to me, I was like, I've got to get 10 shows booked. So, yeah, I get it. I don't know if I would do it again.
Yeah.
Because it is a lot of energy to put into jokes that I'm never going to use again.
Well, yeah, it's like actual homework.
It's like, a lot of people love the homework. That's why I've never done Evening with the Authors.
Yeah.
You know, like Big Jim, who started that show, is one of my closest friends in comedy. And he'd asked me like twice. And after the second time, I was just like, it's just not my thing, dude. Like, I just don't want to create a character and write. I just don't want to do it. You know, I think it's cool, but it's not for me. And this was the same thing. Like, I'm never going to use any of these jokes ever again, you know?
Yeah.
And I had to write, you know, you have five jokes for who you're against, but that means you write 15 to pick the best five, you know? And then I had to do the exact same thing for the other two, for Roxanne and Laura, just in case I did advance and that they advance. I had to be ready for the final round. And so I'm writing like fucking 45 jokes.
Yep.
That are all just gonna be like into the dumpster now. You know?
Yeah.
Like, so it was just like that. So that it's good. Push myself outside my comfort zone, do something different. And again, it was a fun night because all of the comics were great and very cool to hang out with. And Kevin is very good at putting on shows. He's got a lot of hustle. He structures a show really well. Mm-hmm. So always, you know, happy to do shows for him. But yeah, it's one of those things like, okay, I don't need to do that again for another year at least, you know?
Yeah, I'm good on that.
Yeah.
I think it's smart to have everybody do actual stand-up.
Oh yeah.
Because like when, for me at least, watching anything over an hour of just roasting is very exhausting and tedious. Mm-hmm. It's like, okay, because like you said, it's like you're doing research. So everyone's working from the same research unless you actually know the person.
Right.
And can go much, much deeper.
Mm-hmm.
So you get a lot of overlap in jokes. I remember in Indianapolis when everybody wanted to do roast battles.
Oh, it was so hot for like summer. There was one summer everybody was wanting to do roast battles.
Yeah, but not every scene needs to be doing roast battles because it's just mean.
Yeah.
It's like,
you
got to
see
funny.
These people next week. You got to see these same people again next week, dog.
It was like they say something. You're like, oh, you really felt that shit. You've been waiting for a minute to say that. That is uncomfy. So you will made enemies for life.
Yeah. I'm glad it's not as popular as it used to be, but it still is, you know, it still pops up every now and then. You still see them, you know, obviously because I just did one. But
they would do these shows, there would be no stand-up portion to it.
Yeah, the stand-up thing was also nice, and Kevin talked about it too. Is like it allows the audience to kind of learn who you are first.
Mm-hmm.
And then learn to like you. If you're likable during your stand-up set, then it goes a long way. Then they don't just see you being a dick.
Yeah.
Now, if your stand-up persona was like an Anthony Jeselnik type or whatever, where it's makes like a sense. Doubling down, but like everyone on the show is like very likable and like, hey, this is just jokes about my life and here is who I am or whatever. So it definitely then, and Kevin even explained that to the audience. He's like, okay, now they're going to be mean. Like the whole point is, and you're voting for who's the meanest, who is the funniest slash meanest,
right?
You know, and so the whole thing, it went pretty well, actually. It worked the structure up, it worked pretty well. So
that's good.
Yeah,
all positive experiences. It's funny to, I feel like this happens in the Midwest if you've been doing it long enough, where you get those last minute cancellation calls, mm-hmm. like you did. Mm-hmm. It's just like, what a wild turn of events of coming in the host,
mm-hmm.
and you're at your home club waiting to see if this thing got canceled because of terrible situations, and then getting a call is like, all right, get in the car, come actually host here. Yeah.
Well, I didn't know that.
Host slash feature. They did that, like,
I should have known it was a two-man show because the money was too good for featuring.
Yeah,
I was like, oh, this is good money. You know, and I was also just caught up in the rush of it. And also, honestly, like, this was all, I don't know if it's just too woo-woo to talk about karma or whatever, but mm-hmm. literally that morning, I had stood up for myself in a booking situation, and I had done it the day before, too. That morning, I got asked to feature at an A club that I'd never been to before,
mm-hmm.
That I had been submitting to forever, right? And their pay was abysmal.
Oh,
and this is an A room that everybody knows and wants to do. And I was just like, and I asked a confidant, comedy confidant, that we will bounce shit off each other, like weighing the pros and cons, like, okay, yes, you could get in with that club then,
mm-hmm.
but do you think they'll ever move you up to headlining? And no, because not unless I would get viral or something would happen that would cause me to headline it anyway, because they're not that type of club, you right. know? It's not a Helium. It's not a Bark Entertainment level club, but it is that level of club. Like, okay. They're booking famous headliners. Right. Mm-hmm. And so that was like, why is this pay the worst feature pay I've ever seen?
Oh boy.
And I mean, it's worse than a smaller boutique club with half the seats.
What?
And the person I was going to be featuring for is not a $20,000 headliner.
Yeah.
The person I was going to be featuring for is a reasonably priced headliner. I know, because we've had them at Limestone before.
Yeah.
So I know what their price point comes in at. And so I was just like, you know, and I'm going with my confidant, we're going back and forth, and they're like, you know, you could sell merch. I was like, yeah, I could sell merch or whatever. But I just finally was just like, no, mm-hmm. I'm not going to do this. I'm not going to do five shows for $300, no lodging.
Jesus.
And I was just like, no. And so I stood up for myself and I wrote back. I was like, thank you, but I'm not, you know, I'm not able to do this, you know. And I just kind of, I didn't get into, I wanted to go, y'all should be ashamed of yourselves.
Yeah.
I didn't say that.
and shame then, on you.
And literally, like, again, like an hour later, then I get this Summit City thing and I'm like, oh, karma. I stood up for myself. Right. And now karma's like, how would you like twice that amount of money?
Right.
To do four shows.
Yep.
And lodging.
Yeah.
Which I turned down because I wanted to come back and spend my day in Bloomington anyway, like, just because I've been gone so long and I wanted to, you know, like, it's, which is dumb. That's a lot of driving. But they were also offering a hotel. And yeah. So, yeah. And then the day before, I also set up for myself. There is a new room that I had reached out to, and they're making the classic new room mistake, which is they have booked headliners out till June of next year.
Yeah.
And this, like, I've heard other club owners in their second or third year when they're on podcasts talk about, like, that was a mistake they made their first year.
Yep.
Is they were just so quick to, like, oh, people want to come here, and they just book up the entire thing. And then they were locked into these people for weekends when then suddenly Sam Talent comes available,
mm-hmm.
or somebody else. So they've done that exact same thing. They fucked up and booked too far out. But I was like, but they were like, if you want, you can come feature and then we'll bring you back 6 to 8 months later to headline. And then I looked at who they're headlining and I'm like, I'm not going to feature for any of these people.
Right.
Not to be egotistical or dickish about it, but it's like, if I come in and headline that club with my credits and my experience, I'm going to be one of the bigger headliners that they have, looking at their calendar. And like, it's a new startup baby room, right? Small town yeah. baby room.
Gotcha.
And, you know, cool. I want there to be comedy everywhere. I'd like your like small boutique little rooms like that. Dope.
Yeah.
It's also dope that you're giving these other people headlining weekends, because they're probably people that can do it. They just don't have the credits.
Yeah.
You know, don't have the time.
Everyone's got to headline you first. Someone's got to do it.
Somebody's got to headline you first. So, and this has seemed like the perfect size club and everything. Cool. Awesome. Love it. Right. But I just wrote back. I was like, yeah, I was like, on second thought, I'll just wait till the headlining weekend. Yeah. I don't want to come up and feature. And they haven't replied back to that. And they were super quick to reply back when we were first chatting. Yeah. So I don't know if they got pissy or they think I'm being a diva. But, you know, like, I will just put this, people, I've had so many people ask when we're going to release all the chats. but this is one of the people that they have headlining. And I was like, I'm not going to go feature for that person.
Oh, buddy.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so I was like, and again, I'm not saying that that person shouldn't be headlining somewhere. They shouldn't be headlining,
you should
a small
not
room.
Be featuring,
but
for
like, so
this human being.
Yeah. I was like, this isn't like, well, we're going to have you come in and feature for Jackie Cation, and then we'll bring you back on a soft weekend mm-hmm. to headline, which is what a traditional club would really do, right?
Yeah.
It's like, yep, we understand you're kind of a smaller headliner, so we're going to put you on a soft weekend, like 4th of July weekend, something like that.
Right.
You know, or try to build you up. And I was just like, so I stood up for myself twice this week.
Nice.
Felt good. And, you know, I remember very early on in comedy, I think it was Chris Shaw told me pretty early on, he's like, don't say yes to everything. It's like, you have to draw sort of a line with yourself money-wise or how good the show is going to be, because the more you say no, the more open you are to having better opportunities fall in your lap, which is exactly what happened.
That's Chris Shaw for you. Don't say yes to everything. Have you seen the women that he posts on his Instagram?
Wow.
Chris is a friend.
sounds like somebody ready for roast battle. All right.
You got me in the mood.
Oh man, yeah.
No, I'm proud of you, because I feel like if you were in a, like, all right, there's parts of the year where you're like, I gotta say yes to everything,
mm-hmm.
and I think that is such a misnomer. You don't have to say yes to everything. Like, mm-hmm. you can just try harder to get what you feel like you're worth. And yes. It's not even that you're like, you specifically are going out and being like, I'm the greatest comic in the Midwest and the South. It's like, all right, I know where I rank in mm-hmm. terms of, like, you know, realistic value to the club.
Quality
wise. And like, if you go through a comedy club's headliner list and you're like, there's no reason that person could sell more tickets than you could.
Oh, definitely not. Yeah. They,
which
not
is
only
what the
not,
club cares about.
Yeah. They're not selling more tickets than I am. They're not. And it's not like that I can sell tickets. All right. I'm not, but I am the kind of person that people look up my clips online and then do decide to buy the tickets. I've had that conversation so many times at the merch table. Mm-hmm. We're like, we didn't know anything about you. And we looked you up on YouTube, and then we're like, oh, he's funny. We'll come. I mean, I'm sure you've had it too, where people did a little bit of research, but mm-hmm. also just in the promo for the shows, Hulu, NPR, SiriusXM, Bob and Tom. I mean, I have real fucking credits.
Right.
That a lot of the headliners of this room do not have. And, you know, God bless them. Hopefully they'll all get their, you know, great credits one day, you know. But now, it was just me kind of like standing up for myself, and we don't do that enough. Cause again, if my calendar was not as full as it, and cause I've done pretty good since the challenge of filling up my calendar, mm-hmm. right? Like, if my calendar was wide open, I'd be like, yep, I'll come feature. And then I'll headline it. And then that other show, the A Room that's underpaying, I was like, great, I'll be there. But I'm happy to say that by putting in the work to actually booking things that I actually want to go do for money, that's what I consider to be fair and equitable for where I am in my career. I don't have to say yes to those things, you know? Yeah.
Do you think there's a time where you would have gotten asked to feature for somebody that is like the person you just put in the chat,
mm-hmm.
and you would have just been like, I'm going to go bury that motherfucker. This motherfucker, I'm going to go bury him all weekend. Make him you treat the headliner like it's their fault.
Yeah. No, I don't know if I've ever done that. I don't know if I've taken a gig just to bury the headliner. Yeah, I don't know.
Bins want you to do. Like, the loony bins want at least the two of them, or mm-hmm. They want to see the headliner dig out of a hole. I've been told this as I've asked to get moved up. I was like, why? Like, there's so many times in comedy where the club owner just admits that they don't want the show to be good. Like, you want me as the middle. What you're asking is, like, go up and do crowd work and do the hits, but, like, really don't set the table for the headliner to succeed, yeah. Which is just really, really, really a really bad thing for you to do as a middle. Here's some advice. Don't do crowd work unless you should always ask permission, but don't do it from the host spot and don't do it as the middle unless the headliner knows that's what you do and is right. Like, give me the green light to do that. But these are big faux pas because you don't set the table for the most important person, the headliner, to succeed and the show to be good.
Yeah. And, you know, and like, I have two bits now, depending if I do them. One's kind of newer, so I have been doing it a lot, but I got two bits that I can open up and do like 30 seconds of crowd work. And it's really not even as the new bit is a little bit more crowd worky, but the original one, which is about anybody been married more than twice, it's honestly like, if I do any crowd work with it, if it even goes super well and someone has something funny to say, it's a one round, I make some kind of joke about whatever they said, and then I'm right back into the joke.
You know,
it's just a way to make me seem like I'm more like just conversational and like pulling them into the bit. This new one is a little bit more open-ended, but mostly because I just haven't got it completely figured out yet. Yeah. I realized there was an opportunity there. Now, I did those from my 2-man 30-minute opening spot. But also, like, I talked to Giannis about it and he didn't give a shit. He was just like, yeah, do whatever. And he does a ton of crowd work. It's very different. His crowd work is very organic, like in the minute. He didn't go searching for it, you know? Mm-hmm. Like, honestly, a lot of his crowd work came up when people were yelling some shit out. We had some wild people come out from some of these shows.
Fort Wayne,
and,
baby.
Yeah, and he was a pro. And I don't know if this is just kind of like his crowd is into this kind of thing or knows that, but he rolled with it like that. Yeah. Like, he was there's one woman who just yelled shit constantly. And he just took it and made comedy out of it. So, you know, again, props to him. But one thing I do want to say, first of all, I totally agree with you. Generally speaking, it's a terrible idea to do, especially the host spot. You know, if you don't have 10 minutes of good jokes, you should not be hosting yet. And so I do want to say one other sort of faux pas thing, and I understand why they did it. But on the roast on Sunday, a couple of the comics on stage made jokes about how bad this was going to be for Seneca's career because he was roasting me, like he was never going to get into Limestone. And no one in the audience had any idea what the fuck they were talking about.
Yeah, it's like inside.
It's so inside. And it's just like, you know, and I get it that they were doing it to be funny, but it's also like no one here knows what you're talking about. So it's only funny to us. And the fact that it happened a couple of times during the course of the roast, I just thought was just like, shut the fuck up.
Yeah.
These people don't know. You're just literally just killing in a momentum by talking about this.
Right.
In the same way that I always tell people not to bring me up as like co-creator of Limestone. Nobody knows what that is. Maybe in Bloomington.
Right.
But it's also, then it goes back to the thing too, of like me getting, you know, salty about featuring for certain people. It's like, yo, I have real credits.
Right.
Here's one of my real comedy credits, not my Excel spreadsheet and budgeting skills.
Exactly. Credit. It's like, yeah, I do stand-up comedy, not just.
Yes.
Like when people hear director, that doesn't sound like it's going to be a fun set. It's like, oh, the director. Like
this next comic coming to the stage is the CFO.
why is he doing this?
It's
like
what stands for chief funny officer, by the way. Okay,
got him. My man's on fire, y'all.
Ah, look out, huh? Come on.
This is like, yeah, what we were talking about earlier, it's like when people just come from the same, like these people don't know you, so they're researching your bio,
right?
And like you come up with similar jokes. That's why I don't like doing roasts. Like it's like, all right, what, hopefully some people looked up Limestone and liked and subscribed and we'll sell some tickets next year.
Some audience members were like, oh, we should check that out. Yeah.
Yeah. They keep bringing it up.
Yeah. Roxanne's family. Like, Oh man. I will say that I thought everybody did a great job. Can I tell you my favorite joke that I did write for the roast? Because it got a big enough laugh for me, and it's not as hard or mean. It's, to me, it's just a little bit more clever.
Yeah.
And so the joke was, Seneca's eyes are set so close together in his face that when he gets drunk, he sees single.
I love that.
It's just cutesy. It's just like, yes, I'm making fun of his face, but you know.
I know Seneca, and that is elite.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
My man should have a unibrow. He doesn't, but
like, it's weird that he doesn't. Yeah.
I know. Those shits are like right offset his nose.
But he won. He beat me, and then he beat Roxanne, which really says something because she brought most of the crowd. He did excellent. He was super funny. So
that's a good crowd. Any crowd that like you bring and they're like, yeah. Oh, he got your ass. Like, you got to go home to these people.
Yeah.
And then they're just going to repeat the jokes he said about you for the rest of your life.
Yeah, I was going to say she's probably skipping Thanksgiving this year, at least, if not Thanksgiving and Christmas.
Roast could be good.
Yeah, all right. So we've only got a couple of minutes left. We don't have a question of the week this week, but which is fine because we had a lot of recapping to do and some lessons learned along the way from this week. But if anyone out there wants to send in a question, we'd love to take it on a future episode of the podcast. You can do that by emailing us at mattanddwight@gmail.com. That is mattanddwight@gmail.com. Dwight, what shows do you have coming up this week?
It is. We are in fest season, baby. So I should probably get these 10-minute sets together and stop fucking around.
Quit being mad about it.
I know. Yeah. So on Thursday, October 4th, that is, I'm doing a set at the Milwaukee Comedy Festival at the Laughing Tap. That's 10 p.m. And then doing a headlining set that Saturday, the 7th, also at the Laughing Tap. I believe that's a 5 p.m. show. Mm-hmm. Go to Milwaukee Comedy Fest. And get tickets, and then the next week starts 10,000 laughs. I think I have shows Friday, Saturday. I don't know. Why would I have that information? Don't ask me.
Yeah.
But
yeah,
I believe last time I saw, I'm opening for Beth Stelling, which I'm very excited about, and
doing a
showcase.
Yeah.
So we're in fest season. So
well, some of us are. The rest of us are just out here doing
actually getting. You're getting last minute, very well paid host feature gig. So
yes, yeah, yeah. I started off making me like being feeling sorry for myself, but you're right. I'm killing it. I'm doing great.
Yeah, I will not be getting paid for this show. So,
but you're gonna have the time of your life, and that's what's important.
True.
So I have a couple things coming up that I want to talk about. This Saturday, October 7th, I'll be at the Base Bar and Grill in Springfield, Michigan. Your favorite. Now, Dwight, you might think, oh, but this is a different venue. Nope, it's the same venue. They just changed the name. Used to be JB Whiskey's. Now it's the Base.
Ah, that's right.
Bar and Grill. So
JB's.
Maybe the B stood for Base all this time. Who knows?
Huh. But that's not a terrible one, though, I don't think.
Okay, good. All right. But yeah, I'm there in Springfield, Michigan, this Saturday, the 7th. I'll be headlining that. On Tuesday, the 10th, I will be at Kaiju in Louisville doing a NOM show, Stand and Deliver. I'm not headlining that. John Michael Bond is headlining that one as he's coming through on tour. And so I'm just doing a little set on there to hang out with him. But always a good time at Kaiju. It's kind of a late show for a Tuesday, but cool venue, cool lineup of comedy and music. And then on October 12th, I will be hosting Don't Tell Bloomington, which is in Bloomington, and it's in a location I can't say where, but tickets are on sale, and we have a very cool headliner for that one who's coming through. And then I'll do one more week out while we're at it. On the 14th, I'll be back in Michigan for another one-nighter in Ludington, Michigan. It's a little bit farther up there. And then that will be at Timbers Prime. You can get tickets for that on my website. Would love to do well on those headlining shows.
Yes, sir. Check us out. Please. We had some, excuse me, that got a little, but we had an influx of new listeners. So was great to see. And by influx, I mean 12. So
Yeah. Welcome the new Dirty Dozen. Thanks for coming.
Leave us a review. Say nice things. It helps the podcast. Also, send in those questions. They can be comedy related, or we can do another book review. I don't care. I don't think Matt cares. Make them as long as you want. I apologize for mocking everybody that sends in a question. I'm working on myself. I'm trying to become a better person. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Send those questions in, though.
Yeah. Now, last week, and this could have been why we got all the listeners, was we did a dramatic reading of Knocking Boots by Luke Bryant.
I don't know. I should look into the retention. Because
see how many people stuck around for that?
Yeah, that had to drop immediately.
So you're saying not to do it again. Okay, so you can also let us know if you want to hear more dramatic readings of terrible country lyrics.
Send in your requests.
Yeah, send in your requests. We'll do it. You know, She Thinks My Tractor Is Sexy, for example. Ooh. We could do that one. We could do
Breaky Heart.
Achy Breaky Heart, Boot Scootin' Boogie. Mm-hmm. We could do a Jelly Roll song.
Okay. Do you know about Jelly Roll? I don't.
Oh, you need to Google Jelly Roll country artist and see this.
I grew up with a Tootsie Roll, Matt.
Yes. Jelly Roll is an enormously large man with a bunch of face tattoos. Looks like he either, and he may have done a bunch of time in prison. Or he's like has his own like cooking show on Vice. That's what he looks like. Okay, shit. He's like one of those dudes. But he's a very popular country music singer now. Yeah, but definitely looks like he would have stolen catalytic converters if he could have fit under the car. Like that's his look.
Like Post Malone's granddad.
Yes, he looks like Post Malone's. Like yes, that's a good example. The level of shitty tattoos on his face. And like general like dirtbag kind of demeanor to him. So
that's we'll do
it. I did hear one of his songs. It was pretty good though. It wasn't bad. It was like, you know, for modern country, it was pretty good, you know? Okay. We did it. We kind of like just petered off into talking about music again that nobody gives a fuck about. All right. Hey, thanks for listening to the podcast. Yeah. And maybe we'll do a dramatic reading next time. So we don't do all this nonsense of just like, hey, you know what else would not end the podcast if we just kept talking.
Yeah. We got a This Motherfucker segment in there.
Yeah. You know, sometimes it's not about the dismount. It's about the journey.